Good morning and welcome to Central Standard Friday. I'm Monroe Dodd. A couple of months back, some local historians appeared on this show to talk about our streets and how they got their names. Today, we're back on the topics of names and stories, this time about some of our neighborhoods and some of our parks. To talk about them, we have three more of Kansas City's stable of well-equipped historians. Northtown, Southtown, Midtown and Crossroads, Westside and Brookside, Quality Hill and Union Hill, or Loose Park, Swope Park, and even Andrew Dripps Park. They're all fair game for our three local history guests, who are David Jackson, archivist of the Jackson County Historical Society, headquartered in Independence, Ann McFerrin, archivist for Kansas City Parks and Recreation, and Jeremy Druin of the Missouri Valley Room in the Kansas City Public Library. Welcome, all of you, to Central Standard Friday.
Thank you.
Morning, Monroe.
Good morning.
Ann, let's begin with you. Tell us about that obscure little park I mentioned earlier, which bears the name of someone called Andrew Dripps. Where is that, and who was this guy?
Well, it's located north of 16th Street between Jarboe and Bellevue. Andrew Dripps was an agent for the American Fur Company and traveled a lot in the West tracking furs. He was the father of a lady who was married to a notable Kansas City person, Catherine Dripps, married William Mulkey. And William Mulkey and his wife gave some property to the city of Kansas City in 1882 to honor her father. At the time, it was known as West Prospect Triangle because of the location of where it was. But in 1951, it was renamed as Andrew Dripps Park.
And this little triangle is kind of high atop the West Bluffs.
Yes.
Up near the Mulkey area, which Mulkey
exactly.
Square, Mulkey Park, mm-hmm. and those things.
Yeah, it's just south of the highway.
And it's a very compact piece of ground.
Yeah, it's very small.
And this became a park well before our well-regarded Kansas City Parks program began.
Well, it's very small. It was right by the property of the Mulkeys. They had a nice house up there. So it's just a small little triangle. So I guess it had more meaning to them. But, in fact, it was given to the city as a park property.
And that property was much more extensive before they cut the highway through there.
Well, it still wasn't very big.
Okay.
It was still a very small piece of property, but it was, I guess, symbolic.
Okay. But going from the small to the large, on the other hand, there's Swope Park, a giant an acreage on what's now, I guess, the southeast part of town.
Mm-hmm.
And it was given and named for Thomas Swope.
Yes.
Who was a very wealthy man.
Yes.
And a private guy.
Yes. Okay, well, he gave the property in 1896. He had purchased it about 1893 to use as a farm. It had been used as a farm by the Maston family for a number of years. And there are several stories as to why he gave it to the city, because he had not been known for his interest in park property, and he was one of the people who had kind of spoken up against essentially using property for parks. But there are a couple of stories, one having to do with a friend of his who was head of the Humane Society, Edwin Weeks, and possibly Edwin Weeks talked him into it. And then I've heard other stories about other people talking to him about it. He was a very generous man, though, for giving money for certain causes. And he had thought about giving a library, but the city already had a library. And so somehow or other, he came up with the idea of giving property to the city as a park. However, at that time, it was outside the city limits. Mm-hmm. But the people who were kind of in the know knew that eventually it would be going out there. He had a house across the street from the park, from the main entrance. And so in June 25th, 1896, there was a large, very large celebration before giving of the property, and there were estimated like 20,000 people out there. They had streetcars, and they came by buggies and that sort of thing. But the city was very excited about getting that property.
As I remember the story, Thomas Swope sort of wandered around the fringes of things, looking on, and didn't give a speech or anything. David Jackson, Thomas Swope, I can't pass this opportunity up to talk about his mysterious
untimely
death.
Demise.
Yes. Tell us a little bit about that before we move on.
A couple of years ago, one of your colleagues at the Star, Giles Fowler, published a book called Deaths on Pleasant Street. It was the 100th anniversary of this mysterious death of Thomas Swope and another member of the family as well. So there's some interesting things that took place in the Swope home in Independence in October of 1909, where a cousin passed away at lunch or at dinner time, and then a couple of evenings later, Thomas Swope also came down with symptoms similar. So there were months of questionable things going on in that home, and people started to talk the M word, and ended up in three trials where they tried to convict one of the son-in-laws of the family for trying to abscond with the entire Swope fortune by knocking off some of the relatives and making the fortune larger for her or for his wife's share. So if you want to know more about that, you got to buy the book.
A family marked by at least a taste of dysfunction. We talked about some Kansas City parks here. Jackson County has a bevy of parks, too. How far back does the Jackson County Parks Program go?
Probably the 1920s. I don't know the exact date, but the first park was Adair Park, I understand, and it's south Lee Summit Road, south of, right at 40 Highway, I believe. And when Mr. Truman worked for the county as county executive, he was in what would be Mike Sanders' position today. He and his co-workers put together a wonderful book that I'm sure Ann and Jeremy are well familiar with. It's called Results of County Planning. And they went around to all the different they actually drove around with a photographer, Mr. Truman did, and took pictures of rural areas, places that needed to be connected by roads and needed new bridges. And this was in the late 1920s, early 1930s, when that 10-year plan was passed by the voters for public works programs where bridges and roads were developed. And in this book, it's a really fabulous book with wonderful pictures, which the Historical Society owns most of the images from. In the back, they have plans for the future. And they actually planned what became Lake Jacomo and Lake Lackawanna, Longview Lake. And that was in the 1920s, early 30s. Lakes that didn't come around until the 1950s and the 1980s. So really far-reaching vision of those planners back then.
Indeed, and the need for parks and open spaces was often cited as these neighborhoods we got are very, very crowded. Jeremy, in the late 19th century, there were quite a few neighborhoods of Kansas City, some of which have names and some don't, where people were thought to be living on top of one another.
Yes. some of the early neighborhoods, such as, these people weren't necessarily living on top of each other, but Quality Hill was definitely one of the first upscale neighborhoods in Kansas City. It was land purchased by Kersey Coates. He was, I think, the original resident of Quality Hill. Eastern money, a lot of people who worked in the banking industry, stockyards, lived in Quality Hill. But it did get crowded, and eventually a lot of those families moved south to Hyde Park, moved east as there was crowding, and also as the stockyards grew, the odors from the stockyards,
yes.
I've heard, is one reason why a lot of those families moved south and east.
That can really do in a neighborhood. All those cattle and pigs and horses and stuff.
It's like a CAFO today. People don't want to live near that.
Not in my backyard. And the parks program was quite a big thing in the 1890s. It stemmed from a few, fairly rich and influential folks who thought to get it going and lift all boats as a result, right?
Well, there were starting to be movements as early as the 1870s as far as getting Kansas City parks going. A lot of people, of course, were from back east where parks are very popular. And there were a couple of instances where there were attempts to establish parks in the 1870s. And we talked about Andrew Dripps Park given to the city. Of course, the park department didn't really exist until 1892. It was started in 1890, but that didn't exactly work out too well. And then also in 1891, a judge died, Azariah Budd. And so he gave property to the city as to what became Budd Park. And again, that was before the park department was really formed. But when it was, then that was one of the early city parks as well.
You're listening to Central Standard Friday on KCUR. I'm Munro Dodd, and we're talking about our parks and our neighborhoods. How do they originate, and where do they get those names? There's a neighborhood not far from our studio. It's a neighborhood now called Westport. And yet Westport was once its own town, Jeremy. And in fact, it preceded Kansas City. Am I right?
That's right. settled by the McCoy family early in, I believe, in 1834. John Calvin McCoy, son of Isaac McCoy, platted the town in 1835. The California-Oregon Trail, Santa Fe Trail passed through Westport and it eventually became incorporated in, I believe, 1857.
And today we think of it as a somewhat, say, funky neighborhood and definitely at its heart an entertainment district, and you'd never know it was there before all this.
It's the oldest, to do with one of the oldest parts of Kansas City, mm-hmm. really. Yeah.
And it voted to become part of Kansas City in the 1890s, late 1890s.
And it was after the Civil War that really Kansas City became the dominant town, and you saw the decline of Westport in a sense.
Downtown Kansas City was really just like the river port for Westport, mm-hmm. is basically.
It takes a little bit of reimagining to figure out what things were like those days. We all put, our current view of, well, Kansas City is the big thing and Westport's this neighborhood, and it was the reverse then.
Imagine coming up the river in the 1830s and where downtown Kansas City is, the skyscrapers in the loop, was hillsides, with ancient forests of oak and walnut and cherry, and that's where we got those street names mm-hmm. that you mentioned in your program last month.
That early town called Independence was linked to this early town called Westport, both of which became neighborhoods and, of course, Independence was already a city, by some of those trails, David.
That's right. In fact, there are remnants of that road leading directly from downtown Independence and downtown Westport, let's say. It's called what would you imagine it was called? The Independence and Westport Road.
Is there a neighborhood or park that you've always wanted to know the name of? We've got the experts on, so call us at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. You can also tweet us. Our handle is KCURCST. You can even post on the KCUR Facebook page. There's a Westport Independence Road. There's a street in Independence that's kind of comes and goes called Westport. And it's, I don't know if you could say it picks up, but then, of course, there's a Westport Road in Kansas City. And a park, a tiny park with the statue of John Calvin McCoy in Westport.
Pioneer Park, it's called. Yeah, it has McCoy.
Bridger.
Bridger and?
Jim Bridger.
Mm-hmm. And the other,
Well, maybe some of the audience will remember it. Let's move a little bit south down the hill to Brush Creek. A lot of people drive past it each day. That whole area from State Line East along Brush Creek, I think all the way to the Blue River, is that a Kansas City park?
Yes, it belongs to the Kansas City Park Department.
And so it's maintained by Kansas City
mm-hmm.
Parks?
Yes. Uh-huh. And when they had the 1977 flood, they made some drastic changes, including opening up the creek again that had been put underneath. Going through what is now known as Tice Mall and all that sort of thing. Now it's open creek again.
And I can't pass the opportunity to talk about the Pendergast concrete that helped pave that creek mm-hmm. right back in the
80s. It was very well done. When they started taking it out, they found out how thick it was and well constructed. I mean, he may not have been the best person to be around, but the quality of work that he did, I mean, of course, he got paid more the thicker it got, too, but it was very well made.
We're talking about Thomas Pendergast in the 20s and 30s, the boss man of Kansas City, and he had a ready-mix concrete company mm-hmm. where the concrete could come to the site and get poured. Let's go now to a caller, Jenny in Jenny in Kansas City. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm wondering about Hyde Park and who it was named for. I read about a Dr. Hyde that was the nephew-in-law of Colonel Swope, but I'm not sure if that's who it was named for.
No, it isn't. It was not. It preceded Dr. Hyde's notoriety. It was created as a private park for people who were living in an area called Hyde Park Jansen Place. And some squatters had gone in there. It was a little ravine, kind of roughshod, set up shacks, and they hired a young landscape architect who'd come to Kansas City in the 1880s named George Kessler to do the design of the park, and he worked on that in about 1887, 1888.
Did it start out as a golf course, too?
Was it there was a golf course that was
part of the park?
Well, yeah, mm-hmm. part of the, and that was instigated by the homeowners again.
Okay.
But it was kind of an urban renewal thing. They wanted to keep the undesirables out of there. Therefore, they made it into an active park. There was a little tennis court and walking trail and that sort of thing. It's very small, so it's not like a whole lot of things went on, but they kind of claimed it back from the people who were trying to squat there.
And Monroe, Hyde Park has a very active neighborhood association that has for many years been assisting its residents to learn more about the history of their homes and of the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. A lot of these neighborhood histories come out of one person's interest in their own home, and they soon discover that, well, the history of one's home is also the history about that block and about that neighborhood and then about that area of the city, and it just keeps going from there.
It kind of gets down to your own identity, doesn't it? Part of your identity is where you live. I mean, part of it is that, you know, we want our names pronounced correctly, but we also want our neighborhood kind of known. I guess. Does that make sense to you guys? Is that why neighborhoods?
We get a lot of calls from people who are interested in the history of their home and neighborhood. They want to know the date their house was built. That's the number one question. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's a good segue to say, you know, sometimes those kinds of obscure questions don't have answers. They're not recorded mm-hmm. anywhere.
And although the Landmarks Commission has information on when certain things were set up on the building of the houses.
Building
and
permits.
Then also... Jeremy can come in with a little bit of information they have about the history of houses.
That's right. Oh, sure. That's probably one of our more popular areas of research for our patrons coming in is researching the history of their houses or their home building. City directories, we found a lot of people want to know the social history of their house, not just when it was built and the architect, but who lived there over time. Definitely an interest in photos as well. And last year, we acquired a 1940 tax assessment photograph collection that was formerly with the Historic Preservation Office. In 1940, they did a systematic survey of all, a photographic survey of all houses in Jackson County, and we have the surviving Kansas City portion. So for some people, it's the only photograph they'll get of their house in Kansas City.
And I will say that I don't know of the other cities that were photographed that they exist.
Right. We have other people. Hyde Park is unfortunately missing, some other areas of town.
Small sections, right.
Or individual photos that are missing. And then, of course, the rest of Jackson County. We do get a lot of inquiries about those photographs. And if anyone knows where they are, let us know.
Do you remember Jane Flynn?
Yes.
She salvaged those photographs from the dumpster. They were thrown away.
Now, Jeremy, people can come to the fifth floor of the Kansas City Public Library downtown at 10th and Baltimore to see some of that, to talk to people like you, right?
That's correct. We're there Monday through Saturday. We have librarians and archivists on staff to help patrons with their research. Again, we have city directories, maps. Many of our photographs and maps are on our website at kchistory.org.
All right, let's get a call in from Mary in Kansas City. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
What's your question?
What I'm calling about is Klapmeyer Park is on State Line at about 124th Street. It's a tiny little park, and there's no there are just houses around it other than on State Line. And there's only place for, like, one car to park. I mean, I don't understand why the city would even be maintaining it, because I don't ever see it being used as a park.
It's probably named after the Klapsmeyer family, who donated the land, of course, too. Mm-hmm. So
And when areas are developed, a lot of times the developer will give property to become a park, yeah. And that's one of the ways that Kansas City has gotten some of the smaller parks.
And there are some private parks, too. Some neighborhoods collectively are trustees of small little pocket parks, let's say, and so they maintain those small common areas.
And they'll have swimming pools sometimes, neighborhood pools and things like that, open only to the people in the neighborhood. Yeah. The cynic in me notices occasionally that developers will donate part of the land that is very near a creek bottom or something, some other place that likely to flood or something.
You can't develop it, so you might as well donate it. Right.
This park was at least created in 1973, so it's a fairly new one.
But the optimist in me says they're still nice places to be and ride bikes and that, even on a one-car park. Well, Mary, thank you very much for your call. Let's go now to Aaron in Kansas City, Kansas. Good morning, Aaron. Aaron, are you there? All right. We're going to go to Rick in Shawnee. Rick, good morning.
Hi. I wondered if there's a difference between Fokker Park and Tice Park. I thought maybe Tice Park was the south end of that area. Is that even the right pronunciation? Because I've heard people call it Tice and Cease.
It's Tice. Named for Frank Tice, who was on the park board. He was involved with grain trading, and he also did a lot of good works in the Kansas City area. The reason a lot of people know it as Volcker Park is that when the statue, the fountain, was put there in 1958 to honor William Volcker, who was a notable person in Kansas City who gave a lot of his money toward charitable things and helped start German Hospital, which became Research Hospital, as well as giving a lot of money to the University of Kansas City, now UMKC, that area had no name. There was no name to the property. The city had thought about trying to create a cultural corridor through there from the Nelson Gallery over to the university, and that was going to be kind of part of it. So the property was just known as the Volcker Park because the park itself had no name. Well, when Frank Tice died in 1965, the park was officially named Frank Tice Park, but by then so many people had known it as Volcker Park because of the fountain that some people still call it Volcker Park.
In fact, in the 1960s, Volcker Park was quite the hangout for the countercultural section of Kansas City, as I recall.
Oh, very much so.
I wouldn't know about that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they had the park department at that point had lots of activities going on. The fountain was located, as you probably remember, in a different position than it is now. It was right in the center of the park, mm-hmm. and that just invited activities right around the park. It was a beautiful place.
And I just caught myself saying Volcker Park when Volcker Park doesn't exist. There's mm-hmm. another one like that I think exists, and a lot of people do, Gillum Park. Mm-hmm. And it's not really Gillum Park.
Yeah,
right?
It's never really been officially given the name of Gillum Park. It was part of the acquisition of the property to build the roadway. And, of course, it's a park area, and it's off Gillum, so it's known as Gillum Park, but it's not officially known as Gillum Park.
Lynn writes us in an email, what is the origin of the name Briarcliff? This is an area north of the river. I can take a guess at it, and if anybody knows for sure, I believe our panel may not know. My guess is that a developer thought it was a nice-sounding name, north of the river, and it's on kind of a cliff area.
Mm-hmm. And there was just Briar Patch, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of a logical name, I think.
A little more mellifluous than
maybe
Briar Patch.
Maybe our friends in Clay County can help us out.
Mm-hmm. That would be great. Katie writes an email, could you talk a little bit about the history or any stories about Loose Park? And Loose Park is also kind of the name of the neighborhood around it, too. So we have neighborhood and park there.
Well, the Loose property, the Loose Park property was given to the city in 1927. Mrs. Jacob Loose, Ella Clark Loose, purchased the property to give as a park in memory of her husband who died in 1923. Jacob Loose and his brother ran the Loose Wiles Biscuit Company, known for Sunshine Crackers, and made a lot of money doing that. They were very generous in giving lots of different things to the city. They had two children who died young, so they had no children. And so they gave away a lot of their money for various important things, but they always liked to have their names on it. So if you see something by the Looses, you'll see some kind of notation that the Looses did it, but, I mean, that's not a huge thing to ask. So the property had been owned by the William Bent, who was a frontiersman, mm-hmm. and another frontiersman bought the property after he died, Seth Ward, and that was all used as farm property.
And their houses still stand along 55th
Street. Yeah, Bent Ward property still stands on 55th Street, and the property was also the site of a large battle of the Civil War called the Battle of Westport. That's not the only place the battle was fought, but that's the most notable, and that's where the most loss of life occurred, was right there. But it was thought a few days before, coming over from the Blue River, going west to that area, big fight. Then people, as they were retreating, they still had skirmishes going on.
And once hostilities were over, it had another life before it became a park. It was the Kansas City Country Club's first mm-hmm. site, was it not?
Right. Yeah, that property was leased by the Ward Investment Company. Seth Ward became a real estate developer, and his son Hugh took over the business after Seth died. And from 1896 to 1926, the property was leased to the Kansas City Country Club, and that's why that's known as the Country Club District. When Jason Nichols was building his new residential areas, people knew the Country Club, and so it was Country Club Plaza and that sort of thing.
We're going to take a short break, but when we return, we'll continue taking your calls and sharing the stories of neighborhoods. Central Standard will return in a moment. Welcome back to Central Standard Friday. I'm Monroe Dodd. Today we're talking about Kansas City's neighborhoods and parks, how they came to be and how they got their names. With us are Ann McFerrin, archivist for the Kansas City Parks and Recreation Department, Jeremy Druin of the Missouri Valley Room at the Kansas City Public Library, and David Jackson, archivist for the Jackson County Historical Society in Independence. Do you have a park or neighborhood you're wondering about? Do you have one you want to tell us about? If you have a question and that we can't answer it today, well, we'll try to find an answer for the next time, 4 weeks from now. But if we're lucky, we'll know all the answers today. You can join our conversation by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. And we were talking about Luce Park just then. So let's go now to Jerry in Lee Summit, who has a question. Jerry, good morning, and thank you for waiting.
No problem. And first of all, Alexander Majors is the third guy at Westport.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I came back from a trip to Milwaukee, and they have a park there that's 10 foot by 10 foot, and it's the city's smallest park. What is our smallest park?
It would probably be Andrew Drips. Let's see here just a second. I can look it up. Drips. It's 0.16 acres.
A little bit bigger.
So that's
that certainly isn't 10 feet.
Yeah.
We've got Milwaukee Beach.
But that's
Beach.
A good idea. There is. I don't know if it's technically a park. Ann can answer this, but it's Needle Park. It's a little pocket park downtown.
Oh, the garment. It's a garment district.
Yeah, it's pretty
area.
Small.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. I'm writing a book with Ann Brownfield right now. It's going to be out next month. 0.76. Mm-hmm. And we're writing a book to be published next month on the history of the garment district. So that little mm-hmm. pocket park mm-hmm. was in my mind. Mm-hmm.
There's also a pocket park on Walnut called
Oppenstein.
Oppenstein, right.
Yeah, they were jewelers in Kansas City. Uh-huh. And that's actually a city park. It's not part of the parks and recreation property.
That would have to be a fractional one. Jerry, thanks very much for your call. Let's go down to Jim in Midtown. Good morning, Jim.
Yeah, I'm also known as Wine Guy. And Charles Frews has always alluded to a Bud Park that Joan Crawford grew up in that neighborhood and spent some time in that park playing. Do you know of any of that?
Yeah, she
I'll
attended.
Take out there. Hey, peace out.
Yeah, she did. She of course, was born, I think, in I'm not sure exactly where she was born, but she did grow up in Kansas City, and she did spend time over at Bud Park. I was trying to remember what school she was attending at the time, but she did live near there for a while. And, yeah, she definitely probably spent time in Bud Park.
Kansas City metro area has lots of famous people that come from it, and perhaps the most famous is Harry Truman, who looms large, David, in Independence, Missouri. I know there's a Truman Historic District, and therefore the name of his neighborhood, of his home, Truman Road in Delaware, mm-hmm. is kind of called that. How long has it been called that, or has it only been in the last decade or so?
You mean the Truman District, the
yes.
historic district? I think the 1970s they were beginning to do a study of the area. I don't know when it was first listed on the National Register. It's just recently been expanded, though, too. And it focuses on the history of the area where Mr. Truman lived for most of his married life and where he would walk each day after the presidency and would just tip his hat and talk to everybody who would pass him by on the sidewalk. There is a great neighborhood organization called the McCoy Neighborhood that has banded together and is very active at preserving the history of that area. They've published a book of the McCoy Neighborhood by Bill Curtis, and that's kind of a good entree way to mention some of the other books that have been published on some of these neighborhoods if you're interested in knowing about them. I kind of did a little thinking and browsing of the Kansas City Public Library's website last night, and there are a couple of
thank you for that.
Yeah, there are a couple of great books that have been published about most recently about some Kansas City neighborhoods. One is Brookside and Waldo. They're two mm-hmm. separate books by Ladine Morton. She's just gotten those out. Great books that she's use both of our locations to research?
Yes. Yes, Ladine spent quite a bit of time in the Missouri Valley Room to research both of those books.
Super. And a few years ago, Nancy Delorier published one on Eastwood Hills. So these books started as some one person's interest in their own house in their neighborhood and ended up in book form.
Let's go now to Mark in Brookside. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. Well, I just picked up on your conversation, so I will look up the book about neighborhoods. But my question was, I came across an old map that had Platts and a neighborhood called Starkwood, which is at Holmes and Meyer Boulevard and ran south to Rock Hill and was only about 2 to 3 blocks wide. And I didn't know if anyone had heard about this neighborhood. It's actually the area that I live in.
Sometimes those names are technically just subdivision names. They're not really neighborhoods. I mean, they can be one and the same, of course.
Yes.
But Starkwood could be like my own neighborhood, which is Holwood. Well, who's ever heard of that? I think that might be an accurate answer to your question regarding Starkwood, though. We could probably look that up in the Platts of Jackson County Recorder of Deeds and see that for sure.
Okay. Well, I'll do that. And one other just quick follow-up. Anyone know the history of Holmes Park, just south of there?
Mm-hmm.
That's its real name.
And that was a town.
Well, 69th. It ran 69th and 70th. No, it was just named basically because it's on Holmes Street. And it was developed in the late 40s, early 50s. So it's not an old park.
It's marked by the big tower.
Oh, right. No, that's Tower Park.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's on 75th and Holmes.
That's in Holmes, right. Okay.
And what the Holmes Park was probably named after the Holmes Park settlement, let's call it.
Well, it was named kind of just like Holmes because it's such a, you know, it's 1940. So we're not talking, we're not talking an old. Now, there used to be a Holmes Square Park, which was down at between 18th and 19th. Holmes and Cherry. And so that was a very important park in the development of Kansas City Park System 1896 because it was one of the first neighborhood parks. They built it specifically for the neighborhood it was in.
And now it is a substation for the electric company, I believe.
But they also have recently put up a plaque that tells a little bit about the history of Holmes Square Park.
All right, very good. Now, Let's go to Mike in, I guess, Prairie Village. Mike, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Hey, I'm taking you across state line. I don't mean to do that to you, and I don't know if you would know too much about it, but
it's all right.
My son and I just started doing some bike rides around Prairie Village and seeing some of the parks, and we live in a house there that was, I believe it was one of the first, I think it was a home, like a model home, and we have kind of an original plat, a little sketch of what the area was going to be like, and of course it doesn't look anything like that now, and Harmon Park and Franklin Park, both of them weren't in that sketch, and I just was wondering if you knew anything about them or how they came about or any of the parks in Prairie Village, really.
Well, I think Franklin Park was named for former mayor of Prairie Village, possibly. Now, the other, I'm not real Harmon, I've heard of it, but I think Franklin Park was a mayor.
Is Harmon Park the one right behind the city hall where the swales of the Santa Fe Trail were found?
Mike? I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, there's some swales there. I know it for that, but I don't know why it's named Harmon, David.
A lot of the parks departments across Jackson County, and I'm sure in Johnson County too, have great websites, and I don't know if you've checked that out yet or not, but the Prairie Village website may have a parks department link with some information. Mm-hmm. I checked out Blue Springs, Raytown, Grandview, Lee Summit. They all have great sites. Of course, Kansas City is good, too.
Yeah, I'll definitely look into that.
Mm-hmm. All right, Mike, thanks very much for your call. David writes in an email, were the neighborhoods that show up on old maps, such as Dodson at 85th and Prospect and Dallas at 103rd and State Line, were they originally small towns like Westport?
Yes. Yes, they were.
There's a good book. Oh.
Go on.
Oh, yeah. There's a great book that was published in the 1920s, late, I think 1928 or 29, called Jackson County Opportunities and Resources. You can check it out at the Kansas City Public Library. When the Jackson County Historical Society is back operational in another month in the Truman Courthouse, we've got a copy of that too. But it's a great book that covered some of those small towns that are no more. They just started out as little burgs, and some of them just never went anywhere. And now they're still there, of course. The area is there. Some of the homes are still there, the buildings. but they've kind of been incorporated as cities around them have taken them in.
David, who published that book?
It was a Chamber of Commerce for Jackson County that didn't last very long. I've never been able to find out any other information about that Chamber of Commerce, but it was short-lived, but they put out a great book.
One of the interesting things about Dodson, which is about 85th and Prospect, if you go just a little bit further west up on 85th Street, that's where the Ready Mix Concrete Company was. And the parts of it is still there.
It was also the end of a rail line that was used by the Country Club streetcar and also for freight service. It would go out to Dodson. In fact, that trolley trail that runs through along Brookside mm-hmm. Creek and things, it goes out toward that way. Mm-hmm.
There was also a business in the 1920s that's mentioned in this book out at either Dodson or Dallas that produced explosives. It was a very dangerous operation that they were taking on out there, and some of the remnants of those buildings still remain.
Probably in the Dodson area, because that was a bit industrial. So.
Okay.
Patrick writes in an email, what about Heim and Park and Electric Park in the East Bottoms? Now, these are amusement parks.
Yeah.
In fact, Heim Park was the first, and Electric Park, but you guys go ahead.
Two electric parks, actually.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, Heim Brothers started the electric park. They made beer.
Yes, they're brewers.
And so, yeah. So it was kind of help promote their own things, and it became very well known, very popular. So they moved to what is now about 47th and Paseo. And it's a housing development right now. Do you mm-hmm. want to talk about it some more?
Since the 40s, I think it's the Village Greens or something.
You're right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after Electric Park burned, mm-hmm. famously.
It still kept going for a while, though. Yeah. Part in the 20s, about 1927, there was quite a big fire.
The whole topic of amusement parks is completely separate from, you know, the green space parks that we all traditionally talk about. The Historical Society had a journal article that we put out a few years ago where a gentleman studied all these amusement parks and encapsulated their history. So that would be a good resource for anybody to check out on amusement parks.
You're listening to Central Standard Friday on KCUR. I'm Monroe Dodd. And I got to fit in one other thing. There was a streetcar park that was turned into amusement park around a little pond called Troost Lake back in the 1880s or 1890s. And that eventually became a city park with a very interesting story, and Troost Park.
Well, this is kind of before it became that. But, yes, it was kind of on a streetcar line. And the man who started the line made the park so that the people would have a place to go. And it was a very popular park, very pretty. They had flowers. And they also had a petting zoo. And they had a number of animals so that the children would come and, you know, they could play in the park and they could pit the animals and all this. Well, when they closed the park, this bad thing anyway, when they closed the park, instead of, there was no place to put the animals, particularly they had a bear and they had goats and some other animals there. Anyway, they killed the animals.
Oh.
And I have an article from 1899 when this happened, and it was written in a particularly, I think, gruesome way. And they're followed up with an article in the Kansas City Star about why not have a park zoo, because they brought up the point that there was no place to put the animals. People offered suggestions, but where do you put a bear? And so this was one of the things that helped move along the idea of forming a zoo in Kansas City. The big cities all had them, and Kansas City was growing. And we deserve to have a zoo. And within 10 years, a zoo started in Swope Park. And they brought up Swope Park because it was the largest area, and they thought it would be a good place to have a zoo. And that happened.
So some good came of this.
Yeah.
Your list of, that was Ann McFerrin, who's an archivist for the Kansas City Parks and Recreation Department. Also with us today are Jeremy Druin of the Missouri Valley Room at the Kansas City Public Library and David Jackson of the Jackson County Historical Society. Let's go now to William in Brookside. Good morning, William, and thanks for waiting.
Hi there. I have a question. Can you tell me anything about the guy that probably Byram's Ford was named after?
He was a farmer, and he owned the property there. And that would Byram,
okay.
And so it was a Ford. That was that's one of the areas where, for the Battle of Westport, a number of the soldiers, and that's where part of the battle occurred. And as I was saying earlier, it moved kind of from that area west to what's now Loose Park. But if you go along 63rd Street, you'll find in the water department front yard. There's a big cannon, and there's a sign, and then the park department, and it's starting to follow through there. Recently, within the past couple of years, a Battle of Westport Museum has opened in Swope Park in the old shelter house number one, Swope Interpretive Center, and it's run by the Monette Battle Group. And they do a very they've done a very nice job in having exhibits up there, and I think they have some reenactments periodically. I think they're only open on the weekends, but you might check a website for them.
He was just a farmer in the area then.
Yeah, he was just a farmer and owned the property, and it was his Ford, basically.
The Civil War Roundtable of Kansas City.
Okay.
And next year will be the 150th anniversary of the Battle of Westport, so you're going to be hearing a lot more about Byram's Ford next year.
Okay. All right, thank you, guys.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, William. And Monette was Howard Monette, who I believe wrote one of the first really good books about the Battle of Westport. Mm-hmm. Now let's go to Patrick in Kansas City. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
And what's your question?
I have a family story that in the early 1900s at Loose Park, when the Rose Gardens were first built, there was a statue that was terracotta. That was, I think it was called the Maiden of the Mist or the Maiden of the Garden. And that my Aunt Claire was the model for the artist who eventually became the director of the Art Institute, if I'm not mistaken. I was just trying to find some additional information.
Well, it was the Spirit of the Rose Garden, and that was the first fountain that was in the little fountain area. The fountain area stayed the same, but the center of the centerpiece of the fountains have changed over the years. That unfortunately disappeared in the 1950s. We don't know exactly what happened with it, but it was very pretty if you see pictures. And Walter Rosenbauer, who did work at the Art Institute and might have become the head, he was the sculptor of it.
If you've got a question for our panel of historians today or got a comment to make about your neighborhood or park, you have a few minutes to give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Now let's go to Paul in Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning, Paul.
Hello. How are you all today?
We are great.
There was a map at the Plaza Library. Had a great map of early Brookside area that had a list that showed Jacob Loose Park as still the golf course and also showed a golf course at the end of where Myers Circle was. I don't know if people are aware of that. When it stopped there and it turned around and come back. And it's a great map for the shows back in there. It also shows individual houses and the names of the owners of the houses, including many historical figures, including, I can't even think of the name right now, but it's a really neat map. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that map.
No, but there was a golf course in Swope Park, started about 1906, designed by James Dogleish, who designed designed the Hyde Park golf course and went on to design others. And so when the zoo was incorporated in 1909, where the golf course was located is behind what's now the main shelter as you come in the main entrance of Meyer and Swope Parkway, and that's where the Battle of Westport statue is, building is. Anyway, but behind there in the big meadow is where the golf course was. Well, when the zoo developed in 1909, people who wanted to go to the zoo and would be let off by the streetcar at the main entrance would have to walk across to where the zoo is now located. Of course, it was much smaller, and that's where the golf course was. So there was some conflict between playing golf and people actually walking across that area. So they built a golf course across the street, which is the golf course you're talking about. They used Thomas Swope's old home as the clubhouse, and that existed to about 1916. And when they started developing Meyer Boulevard, and that's when they took the golf course out, and those people who were in that club started the golf course at 87th and Oldham. Up there, I can't remember what the golf course. It's still in existence today, but yes,
there were.
The Swope Memorial Golf Course?
No. This is it's a private golf. Evanston. Oh. Well, it was Evanston Golf Course, which was across the street where Southeast High School is and Meyer Boulevard.
And so there was one also at the end of at Ward Parkway in Meyer. There was another golf course where the circle right. is, the Myers Fountain is.
Right, right around there. Armour Fields Golf Course yes. was located right around that general area. It was just a little bit south, but yes, there was a golf course there too.
Say, Paul, where did you say you saw this map? At the Plaza branch of the public library?
Yeah, it was a wall. It was displayed on the wall, and it was, like I say, what caught my eye was the fact that it had the individual names of the individual owners of the houses, including who was it that got Harry Truman in the office? His house was shown, and
oh, Pendergast.
You know, a lot of them. Yeah, they actually had his name on top of the plot where his house was.
Most of the
and
maps,
all the people from way back then.
Most of the maps are atlases that we work with for people doing research. Some of them have outlines of houses, depending on what the publisher put into these different atlas books that we use for research. But I think what you might be thinking of, and I'm not sure, but J.C. Nichols' company had an artist's rendering done of the Country Club District and
yes.
and surrounding areas. That might be the map that you're thinking of. And, of course, since it is an artist's conception, they would have put the owner's names on the house. I don't want to get people give people the impression that there are maps with people's names of previous homeowners, because that's not the case.
All right. Paul,
I believe that's correct.
Okay,
thank
good.
You.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for your call. Let's go now to Ron in Brookside. Good morning, Ron. Ron, are you still with us? Well, Ron had to go. Let's go to Austin in Kansas City. Austin, good morning.
Good morning. I read a book this year from around about the way that I never heard before that Buffalo soldiers were stationed in Fort Osage. Does your Jackson County person know anything about that? I've never heard of it before.
I have not heard that either. I kind of doubt that because Fort Osage was around in 1808 to about 1825, technically. So I don't think the Buffalo soldiers came around till after that, but there is a curator and an archivist out at Fort Osage that you could definitely give a call to, and John Peterson would know the answer to that.
Okay, I'll try to get that article again, and maybe I can go down there. I think they have a day every year, so I might go down there.
Sure, or give him a call.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Austin. Let's go now to Bill in Leawood. Good morning, Bill.
Hi there. Hey, thanks so much for sharing all your knowledge about this great community, guys. Appreciate that. I live in the neighborhood near 133rd or 135th and State Line, and there's remnants of an old airport there. I walk my dogs through this field, and I see bricks and remnants of old runways and buildings. In fact, I just wondered if you could fill me in on my dog walk area.
Wow.
I don't know the names, but I believe there were several airfields mm-hmm. south of town, early airfields in the early 1900s, 20s, 30s. Mm-hmm. I don't know the names of any of there are specific names, but I believe there were airfields in that area where they would have.
There was one near where David lived.
Yes, Richard's Flying Field. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the only one I know.
And where was that field in exactly?
It was there's a bank there now, U.S. Bank on Gregory Boulevard and 350 Highway, is where it is today.
So, Bill,
but that's different.
But that's
than
a long way from where.
But we'll try to find out information
yeah,
for
that's
you
a great
and
topic.
Get it.
Yeah, we will, Bill. Thanks very much for your call.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Bye bye.
All right.
There is a book called Kansas City Aviation History that was put out by Mr. Bauer, B-A-U-E-R. That could be an option.
Here's Michael in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you today?
We're fine.
Wanted to inquire about the Country Club line, which also was a freight line. It was just mentioned a moment ago. It terminated, of course, in Dotson. Where was its northern terminal? Did it go all the way? I know it went through Westport because I personally can remember the tracks.
It went through downtown. I mean,
it had to go to the West Bottoms.
Yeah, West Bottoms. Yeah, because that's where the streetcar ran, and it was a streetcar line, Country Club line.
So, north of Westport, there is no evidence of it. What?
well, it's gotten taken out. Basically,
yeah,
they removed the tracks beginning back in the I think 90s. The old trestle that went over 43rd Street, it ran over that, ran behind where the house, where the buildings are. Just off of Main Street, you can see the remnants of the tracks at that point. But the ATA people took them out.
What was its route north of Westport?
Well, Michael, let me jump in here just a quick second. That freight line began in Westport and emerged with the Kansas City Railway's streetcar lines that were coming south on Main Street, and they ran to. And so the freight line could use that track. as I recall, from about 43rd Street on south all the way out to Dodson, but it was shared with the country club route of the streetcar lines. So the freight line didn't go necessarily all the way downtown. It went to downtown Westport and ended up in Dodson. And it went on, and I think until the 1960s, and there were even lawsuits by the family over the city's appropriation of it.
I remember growing up, they had trains running through the Brookside area.
Somebody at this table named Monroe Dodd did a book about the streetcar history of Kansas City.
We'll have to take a look at that.
All right. Sorry for the
thank you so much.
Sorry for the plug, Michael. Thank you, though, David. All right. We'll see you. You can listen to this. First, let me say that you've been listening to Central Standard Friday, and that's all the time we have. Our guests, a wonderful guest today, have been Ann McFerrin, archivist for Kansas City Parks and Recreation, David Jackson of the Jackson County Historical Society, and Jeremy Druin of the Missouri Valley Room at the Kansas City Public Library. Thanks to each of you for coming today.
Thank you.
You can listen to this program again, subscribe to our podcast, or listen to any of our previous programs on the Central Standard page of KCUR.org. Central Standard will be back Tuesday, when we'll be exploring the art and psychology behind labels and logos. Up to Date is next with a look at independent documentary and foreign films. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, with help from Ross Steinmetz and Sangeeta Shastri. I'm Monroe Dodd. This is KCUR, and enjoy your weekend.